My first guest this morning is Sarah Stark, author of the new novel Out There. And I hope you'll stay tuned for our second segment when we'll give you a preview of Home Earth Day, the big celebration this weekend at the Rail Yard Park. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you, Hollis.
I want to note so we don't forget that Sarah's going to be reading from her new novel, Out There, on Friday evening, 6 to 8 p.m. at Collected Works. The books will be there. She'll be signing them. Show up. It'll be fun. So I've said this before to our listening audience. I have huge prejudices against local authors, and that's partly, you know, my journalism. One of my favorite journalism professors used to say an expert is someone from out of town. You know, so a local author, you know, come on, if you live here, right?
Yeah. Right. Is it's that Jesus of Nazareth sort of thing.
Yeah. And the other thing is that so many people from outside of New Mexico set novels in New Mexico and write so badly about New Mexico that, you know, it just makes me crazy. So I was really, really happily surprised by Out There. And because it depicts Santa Fe and our culture in a really genuine way.
Well, so. Thank you. I hope so.
Yeah. So Out There is about Jefferson Long Soldier, a young Native American man who's just returned from a tour of duty in Iraq. And he has a very interesting compensatory mechanism, I think a psychologist would call it, that allowed him to make it through the horrors of war and find his way back to life here. And then he takes a motorcycle ride from Santa Fe to Mexico City in hopes of meeting someone. So tell the readers about Jefferson Long Soldier's obsession.
Well, I think you're right in saying that Jefferson was sort of brought into this world with sort of a light shining within him. And that's one of the reasons why I think he survived Iraq. But he believes that it really is this novel, the 100 Years of Solitude by Gabriel Garcia Marquez, which he carried with him at the request of his English teacher from Santa Fe High. It wasn't important to him at the start. He really didn't think he would look at it again once he got to Iraq, but it ends up being really his resource, sort of his Bible. And he chants from it, and he has favorite lines, and he relates to a number of the characters, particularly the character in that novel who has come back from war and is just not the same.
So it's very poignant that Gabriel Garcia Marquez died last week. Or this week, actually, just as we're doing this interview and the book is getting attention. Tell me how you came to create a character with this kind of obsession. What's your relationship to Marquez and his writings?
Well, I didn't read 100 Years of Solitude until I was an adult. I didn't study it in high school or college, but when I did read that novel for the first time, I was immediately in the mind, I felt like, of the writer. And I was so taken with the language that I wanted to know more about the writer. It was really secondary that I understand what was going on in the story. For me, I thought, who is this Marquez? I've heard of him my whole life. I haven't had a relationship with him, but I think with that first reading, I developed my own little sort of obsession with Marquez, and so I read and reread the novel, and then I eventually taught it at the Institute of American Indian Arts, and that's when I noticed this same sort of reaction in students who were reading it for the first time. It didn't matter that it was difficult. It didn't matter that we didn't really understand everything that was going on. There was an immediate connection to that text and a love of this writer.
Do you think it's the sort of this mythopoetic quality, the magical realism, not always knowing what's real and what's not? It's part of that?
I think it absolutely is that. And I don't think it's for everyone. Uh-huh. But for those readers who who look for poetry in a novel. And I certainly do that. And my students at IAIA certainly seem to do that as well. I think if you're that kind of a reader, and you're really in it for the ride, for the journey, Marquez is just, you feel like you know him and you want to know him better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. Not all writers have that effect on us. We don't always care about the writer, frankly. We may love the book, mm-hmm. but the writer is sort of, oh, well, you know, it's nice they did that. But
right.
Yeah. And so you really took something that was very personal to you and blew it into an extreme in the case of the way Jefferson Longsoldier relates to Gabriel Garcia Marquez. He says, he calls him GGM,
yes.
which I love. Would you read us an excerpt from
sure.
the book? Go ahead.
Sure.
If you need to, you can make noise and put your glasses
on. Yes, I'm going to put my glasses on. I am going to read the little scene that takes place at Santa Fe High, actually. Jefferson was a student, graduated from Santa Fe High right before he joins the Army. And this is a little scene in which his English teacher, he is a gifted reader and writer, even though he doesn't really think of himself as much of a student, but he is in an honors English class, and this is the first time that he's learning about the writer. Gabriel Garcia Marquez, have you heard of him? Miss Tolan asked the honors English class the second week of second semester of senior year. And some valedictory chica on the second row raised her hand and recited something she must have looked up online the previous night. Jefferson stopped listening after the bit about the writer being a communist from Colombia. It was just 9 months after this classroom discussion, the fall after he had graduated from Santa Fe High, that Jefferson Longsoldier packed his copy of the novel into his duffel, Miss Tolan having told him to keep it at the end of the semester. No one else had given him a going-away present, unless you counted the 2 packs each of clean white socks and underwear Esco got him at Walmart. Jefferson knew that many things in life did not make sense. He had experienced the confusion and hyperventilation, the standing on his head and the holding of his breath, the still not comprehending why things were the way they were. The fact that he packed his copy of 100 Years of Solitude into his duffel and took it with him across the ocean to Iraq, despite his antagonism toward the book, despite his resentment of super intellectual men, this was one of those confounding things that did not make sense. It did not make sense, and yet it happened. One possible impartial explanation was that Jefferson liked Miss Tolan. She called him dear, but she wasn't over the top. She was also the kind of lady who sometimes dyed her hair pink and never pretended to know all the answers. It is possible that because Jefferson liked her so much, he wanted to indulge her. He imagined that Miss Tolan would love it if he took a piece of literature with him. The Garcia Marquez novel was the last one they'd spent any real time on that spring. After spring break, the teachers knew not to expect much from the seniors. Jefferson couldn't say for sure, but he guessed they'd read some short stories and poetry in April and May. But he hadn't forgotten 100 Years of Solitude, the novel that had beached itself in the dry sands of New Mexico that spring and threatened him from his desk day after day. What a pain that novel had been to him then. And on top of it all, Miss Tolan loved it. She wasn't a bit Hispanic, but she pulled out her Spanish accent as she discussed the Buendía family, José Aureliano and José Arcadio and Fernanda and Remedios, from the front of the classroom, making them construct collages using magazine photos that reminded them of their favorite character. Jefferson knew Miss Tolan would not have known if he'd left the book under his bed at home, but the most honorable part of him wanted to show his teacher some respect, While she was older than all the students, she wasn't all that much older. And besides all that, she was the only white woman he'd ever really talked to. So he took her advice and packed the book, even though he had no plans to ever touch the thing again.
Thanks. I'm talking with Sarah Stark, the author of Out There, about her new novel. So I just want to ask before we go on, how did you feel when you heard that Marquez had died?
Well, you know, even though I knew he was old, and try not to get a little emotional here, but and he had been sick for quite a long time, and I even write about this in the story, that Jefferson is aware that he's sick and hopes that he will make it, that Marquez will be alive by the time he gets down there on his motorcycle. There was a level of shock when I heard the news. And sort of for several days after that, there was an earthquake that rocked central Mexico the next morning. Marquez died on Thursday, and there was an earthquake on Friday. And when I heard that, I sort of expected little yellow flowers or yellow butterflies to maybe start falling out of the sky, which is something that happens in his novels, sort of this very spiritual, mystical moment. And I thought of all the people all across the world who love him writing in their journals, not so much the public celebration, but the private sort of celebrations and people getting their dog-eared copies of
out.
100 out and looking back at those favorite lines.
I did. I went into my garage where I have 20 boxes of books and opened them all until I found my copy.
You know, what is that?
Yeah. So, you know, did you have a Miss Tolan in your life?
Oh, that's a good question. I had lots of good teachers. I didn't quite have a Miss Tolan, but I had grandparents who were very literate, and my grandfather was a novelist, and my grandmother was an English teacher, a high school English teacher, and so always talking to me about books, and always you know, suggesting the importance of having good books around.
And you teach now, of course, you teach creative writing at the Institute for American Indian Arts.
Right.
How long have you been doing that?
I've been doing it with a little break since 2007.
When I was reading this book, when I started reading this book, one of the first questions I wanted to know was, how did you have the chutzpah, the guts, to write about a protagonist who was a Native American, young Native American man? Yeah, I mean, did that come from your relationship, knowing a lot of young Native American men in your work?
Jefferson Long Soldier is inspired really by one student that I taught that first semester at IAIA. I did not know anyone who was a veteran of Iraq before this student. We were studying 100 Years of Solitude as a class. We were about 2 weeks in, and that's when Ruben Santos, my student, spoke up and shared the fact that he had recently returned from two tours with the U.S. Army. And I started writing the novel in my mind, I think, at that very moment. I worked for 2 years after that, really on my own, writing about unexpected, sort of unlikely soldiers who would be Native, who would be poets, perhaps, or chefs, or writers of some sort, artists, really, at war, and because that's what Reuben was. And so it was never really, it never felt like a choice. He was not Reuben, but he was definitely inspired by Reuben. 2 years after I started writing, I decided to get in touch with Reuben. I had just taught him for two semesters. And I discovered instead his obituary online and the fact that he had taken his life, his own life, not long after I'd known him. And really at that point, it was very clear to me who Jefferson Long Soldier needed to be. And he needed to be this sort of new take on Reuben, and a soldier that instead of succumbing, I think, to the darkness, would find some light.
Wow, that's a really, really poignant story. Thank you for sharing that. I was, of course, about to say, so does Reuben know that this book is about him?
He was about to know, and that wasn't, that didn't happen.
You know, one of the things I find so interesting about Jefferson is that he has a lot of very quirky behaviors. He does handstands, and there's one great scene where he does a handstand in the Albuquerque airport. And his chanting, which you mentioned, that he chants to himself from Marquez's book. And then he also sort of rewrites parts of Marquez's book and chants them. And I'm wondering, you know, we don't really know in the novel whether these behaviors were things that he carried with him into war or behaviors that he developed during war. But it, a lot of his behaviors might fit into the large vessel of PTSD, of post-traumatic stress disorder, having these strange behaviors or behaviors that other people would find strange.
Right.
And he also has situations which might be hallucinations.
That's
or,
right.
Or not. So did you study PTSD as you wrote this? How, where did that come from?
This novel was really written from a very organic, intuitive place. I purposely did not do a lot of research on PTSD. In one of the early drafts, I think I have a character using that term. And I decided early on that I really didn't want to label this at all. I wanted the reader to be sort of on an exploration of her own, as she, you know, as the reader reads and thinks, is this who this character is? Is this a product of war? Because I think one of the reasons I really wanted to write this story is that I felt distant from what was going on in Iraq. And at the same time, I felt a burden, sort of a heaviness about this idea that soldiers would be coming home, were coming home, you reading about PTSD in the press, but not really having a personal connection to that. So my, yes, I think the behaviors that I've written about with Jefferson are my attempt to sort of understand what that would really look like for an individual, for a poet, for this particular soldier.
And, you know, one of the things I think you do so well in this sort of reflection of what that might look like is that, well, you know, we get so used to labels, you know, and especially PTSD is just thrown around all the time. And instead, here we see this individual who is wildly creative.
Yes.
In other words, his expressions of his suffering are creative.
Yes.
And imaginative. They're not, you know, he's not beating his head against a wall or kicking his dog or doing all those things that stereotypically we might expect of someone who had suffered so greatly. But you've made him into a very creative individual.
That's right. I did a lot of thinking about, and I still wonder, who knows, why some individuals come home and heal and others do not, and what the combination of circumstances are that allow for that lightness to come in and that healing. Mm-hmm. Not to say that someone would ever heal completely from the experiences of seeing the kinds of things that I can't really imagine what a soldier sees on the ground, but I try to.
Mm-hmm. This is your first novel, right?
This is my first published novel.
Ah.
This is not my first novel.
Uh-huh.
There's two before this.
Uh-huh. And did you attempt to publish them?
I had, yes and no. Mm-hmm. Yes, the first novel I finished around 2005. It did really well in a national literary contest. I had an agent in New York who thought it would sell. and we went through the whole thing. It went to all the top houses, and it didn't sell. It was a very disappointing process. But, you know, it's fine. I've let go of that. It was a good novel. My second novel I wrote very quickly. It's a short novel, and I wrote it right before returning to this Out There, which I had set down and set aside. And that novel, I sort of just decided, you know, I don't have the energy. I'm not going to send it out. I sent it out to one agent who had expressed some interest, and it didn't go anywhere, and I thought, you know, I'm going to get back to my writing.
Yeah, good for you. Good for you. I think it's important that, you know, we are all reminded that the creative process is often not fruitful in a marketable way, and that we have to go on.
That's right.
And do the next thing, whatever next thing creatively is calling to us.
That's right.
And not consider that something didn't sell means it was a failure, you know.
Yeah, that is the challenge, though. But I think, yeah, being in tune with sort of your own energy as a writer, as an artist, and sometimes I find that I actually do have the energy to write those query letters or sort of promote that self-promotional stuff that, you know, you hear is so important. And other times I feel, and that's how I felt with that second novel, I loved it. I love that novel. It was important to write it, but I just needed to get to back to this third novel because I felt very, very strongly about getting out there.
Yeah, it's a wonderful novel, and I really enjoyed reading it. And it's the first novel published by Leafstorm Press. Tell us about that.
Leafstorm Press is a local publishing venture that my husband, Andy Dudzik, and I have started. Andy was the longtime publisher at the Santa Fe Reporter, and he retired last summer. And we have talked about doing this off and on for a long time, and it just sort of happened that I was finishing up this manuscript as Andy was transitioning and thinking about that. And so we're really excited about this. We plan to publish 10 to 12 titles a year in the future, and so this is our debut.
Yay, congratulations.
Thank you.
And you're just now starting to promote this book. This is sort of the front end of your promotion of Out There, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
So
Sarah Stark is going to be at Collected Works on Friday evening. That's tomorrow night from 6 to 8 p.m., signing copies of her new book, Out There, which I can recommend without reservations. It's a wonderful novel. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Sarah.
We're going to take a break now. Please stay tuned to the Radio Cafe.